Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Yes, the award-winning writer for Yahoo Sports. We'll get to him in just a second. It's Spiegel and Parkins live from the park at Wrigley. Our broadcast presented by CDW and Intel. CDW, people who get it. And it's sponsored by Old Dominion Freight Line, the official freight carrier of Major League Baseball and the Cubs. Jeff Passan, not in Chicago. He is in Boston, but he saw games 1 and 2 of Cubs Nationals in D.C. and was a good hang and a good conversation during the game. He joins us on the Grossinger Auto Group hotline. What's up, Jeff?
So that giant billboard that's on the tweet, is that like fixed or is that something like a big TV screen that changes all the time?
For our broadcast? Yeah,
that is a giant video screen here in the park outside Wrigley that plays the game in real time during the course of the game. And if you're a ticket holder, you can come out here and watch.
It's an $11 million TV screen, so that rotates around. We do not have that type of billboard budget. No.
Okay, I was going to say, that was far too big a billboard for this show. I didn't think they would actually put that in a prominent spot with you guys.
Thank you, Jeff.
What an awful, awful beginning to this segment.
It's pretty spot on. I appreciate it.
I mean, we genuinely enjoy your work and say nice things. And then we get to hang out for a weekend, and you start by bashing the most popular midday show on the score in this time slot.
Because here's the thing, Passan. I read your column on Joe Girardi, and nowhere in it did I see citation for me giving you the topic. That's the thing. Plagiarism is what you're doing these days over at Yahoo. And, I mean, it's fine, but, whatever. Just a little attaboy would be fine.
Let's get something abundantly clear here. What Joe Girardi did happened. It did not happen because Danny Parkins told me about it. It did not happen because Danny Parkins saw it on an exclusive stream of a playoff game. I would have seen it when I went back up to the press box. You just gave me a little tip, a head nod.
It was an under.
We both know it was more than that, but that's okay.
Before we get back to Cubs Nats, the fact that Girardi said some crap about not wanting to mess up the timing and the rhythm of his pitcher, Girardi dug himself a far deeper hole by not simply coming out and saying, "I screwed up," didn't he? Did he dig that kind of hole with his team? Are we aware of how his team feels about him?
I think the team sees him for what he actually is, which is a good but occasionally flawed manager whose biggest flaw is that he doesn't trust his players all the time. And you saw this manifest itself with Gary Sanchez. I mean, when Joe Girardi's coming out and starting sentences by saying, "being a catcher," as if his experience 2 decades ago has any bearing on what's going on in the actual game itself, that's the issue right there. And I think if Joe Girardi ever could get over himself in that regard, he'd be an excellent manager, because I do think he understands situations and scenarios. But the moment sometimes gets too big for him, and I think the moment got too big for him in this situation, and instead of initially owning his mistake, which he eventually did, he tried to talk his way around it. And look, when you make a mistake as clear and obvious as what he did, any excuse or explanation you're going to offer out there is going to get picked apart, because it's going to be as fallacious as it gets.
For anyone who doesn't know the play that we're talking about, before the grand slam would have been strike three on a foul tip off the bottom of the bat. Umpire calls it a hit by pitch. It is reviewable. Girardi doesn't go for the instant replay. And after the game says he did not challenge the call because as a catcher, he knows the importance of a pitcher being in rhythm and he didn't want the pitcher to sit out there for a 2-minute replay. Forgetting the fact that if they would have overturned the play, it would have been strike three, batter out, end of the inning. Instead, he has to throw more pitches. Second pitch after the non-challenge, grand slam, 8-3, now 8-7. All that being said to say this, if the Yankees lose to the Indians, does Joe Girardi get fired?
First off, I have to commend you. That was an excellent recap of the situation. Like in a quick amount of time. Nicely done.
I could have wrote your column.
Professional
too.
Broadcaster.
I have no inside information that leads me to this point, but I think Girardi stays, and I think Girardi stays because there are so few good managerial candidates out there and available these days. It makes me wonder if the Yankees look at their options and decide that Girardi is the best of a very flawed group. And that's an indictment on Major League Baseball. I mean, if you go and look at some of the guys who have been hired in recent years, they don't come from this pool of longtime managers down in the minor leagues. Like the skills for being a manager these days are a lot different than they were back in the day. And you see someone like Brad Ausmus, who was a pretty bad manager, actually, in Detroit, not just wins and losses, but decision-making. There were a lot of issues there, and he's going to get a job somewhere else. Might be in Boston, might be with New York Mets. There are a lot of places that he could go, and it just makes me wonder, are the Yankees going to realize they've got the best of what's out there right now?
Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports is with us here on 670 The Score. All right, so Cubs-Nationals was so easy for the Cubs until that fateful eighth inning. And
yep.
Maybe we should have just expected something to happen because it's not supposed to be that easy. My fear is that the Nationals are now awake and confident with their ace going, Max Scherzer, today. What are your thoughts on this series now that it's 1-1 here? We all would have taken a split for the Cubs going in, but the way that it happened, it doesn't feel very good today.
Yeah, especially because you were six outs away from 2-0 and the Nationals just be, you know, dead in the water. Before the series started, I said if Max Scherzer goes game two, then the Nationals win in five. If Max Scherzer goes game three, then the Cubs win in five. And I'm going to stick to that. And I'm not sticking to that because I firmly believe that Max Scherzer is infallible today. Let's remember, the Indians went into game two with Corey Kluber on the mound, thinking that's a guaranteed victory. And he gave up like six runs in 2 2/3, and they needed to scrape back with a crazy extra innings win. So the fate of the starting pitcher in October, I wrote about this today, actually, in the context of the Red Sox-Astros series where David Price is playing a fireman role almost. It's not a starting pitcher-centric postseason anymore. And as much as we'd love to watch Max Scherzer or Masahiro Tanaka last night or Trevor Bauer in game one of the division series go out there and fire, or Kyle Hendricks fire, you know, seven shutout innings of baseball, the expectation for that happening anymore just is not realistic. So that puts us in this place where, okay, who's the better team after that? And I think that in the end, ultimately, the Cubs are going to be the better team in this series. But I do expect it to get back to Washington one way or another. And that, to me, is going to make for one hell of a fascinating game five, in that the Cubs are trying to defend their championship And the Nationals are trying to win a playoff series for the first time in their franchise's history, which dates back to 1969. And for the first time in the city itself since, like, the 1920s. So the amount of history that's going on here, not being on the Chicago Cubs, is something that is very new and, to me, very intriguing.
Also, as a Cubs fan, I'd be fine with it because they'd be pitching Hendricks, and I think he might be the most. I think he might be the most underrated player in the sport. Do you think he's still in that conversation?
You know, he's probably always going to be in that conversation because he is part of a dying breed of guys who live in the 80s and succeed. I was talking with a couple of scouts here in Boston yesterday, and both of them were just marveling, raving about the movement that he gets on his two-seam fastball and how devastating his changeup is. And how, if he really wanted, he could probably get guys out with just those two pitches. And, it, you know, it's such a power game these days. It's a power game with the home runs. It's a power game with pitching. It's a power game with relief. That seeing a guy like Hendricks makes you appreciate the difficulty of getting by with the kind of stuff that he has. And how baseball still is a place for the fakers and the manipulators and the guys who don't use brute strength but use intelligence and guile. And that's what Kyle Hendricks is. He's a throwback, and you don't see a lot of those guys anymore. And honestly, I think that in some ways plays to his advantage because if you're used to seeing 95 to 97 all the time, and you've got this guy throwing 88 to 90, and the ball's just darting right and left, it's something unfamiliar.
Quickly, Jeff, your thoughts on Terry Francona going to Trevor Bauer on 3 days rest, and John Farrell not going to Chris Sale today on 3 days rest?
Totally understand it from Terry Francona. Trevor Bauer would actually rather pitch on 3 days rest. Honestly, like that, he's kind of a freak. And that's part of why I think Francona started him in game one over going Kluber Carrasco Bauer, because he knew Trevor Bauer would give him that flexibility. Chris Sale, you know, there's a lot of talk that he's worn out. I don't know if I buy it. He threw 214 innings this year. He's thrown 240 innings in the past. So the idea that he'd suddenly be worn out here, just I don't think that it holds water. But the Red Sox are a freaking mess no matter what. If they don't go with, say, you know, if they go with Sale today, who do they go with tomorrow? You go with Eduardo Rodriguez? You go with Rick Porcello? Do you go with Doug Fister? Do you go with Drew Pomeranz? I mean, there are no good options. And I think saving Sale there, actually, of all the things John Farrell's done recently, that's one I sort of agree with.
Jeff Passan, Yahoo Sports, author of The Arm. I'll text you some Red Sox takes for your column later on, buddy.
Appreciate it. Look forward to it. And I hope you guys get a billboard of prominence someday.
We need it, buddy. We'll see you in Chicago whenever you come here. It's Jeff Passan, Yahoo Sports, author of The Arm. The segment brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? Join the over 3 million businesses that use Indeed.com for hiring. Post your next job opening on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com.
I think Chris Sale is a bit worn down. His slider was extremely flat in his start. That's one former White Sox pitcher getting his first taste of the postseason and was terrible. In his words, "I picked a bad time to suck," is what Chris Sale had said after his start. Jose Quintana gets his shot today, and that's going to be incredibly interesting to watch. Guy was terrific in the World Baseball Classic, but has not pitched in a game of this magnitude in his life.
Addison Russell is in at short. Baez is out at second. Zobrist is playing second. Schwarber is in at left. John Jay in center leading off. You'll hear Joe Maddon explain today's lineup against Max Scherzer coming up at the end of this hour around 11:50 or so. insane sports day in Chicago, but also a ton of great sports stories around the country. We could do an hour on a ton of them, but we won't. We'll try to squeeze them in. Rapid fire coming up. Spiegel and Parker's on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins live from the park at Wrigley Field. You'll hear Joe Madden coming up in 25 minutes. This segment brought to you by Dell. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. So, there are so many sports stories out there that I feel like we could do a ton on. But with this historic day in Chicago sports and the great doubleheader, we don't really have a whole heck of a lot of time. What is the biggest non-Chicago story that you'd like to get into if we had more time?
Oh, boy. There's so many.
I know.
I guess I'm looking at the rash of injuries out for the year in the NFL. J.J. Watt out for the year for Houston last night. The former Illini, Whitney Mercilus, joins him now. That's a torn pec.
He's on my list, by the way, of most underrated football players.
Love Whitney Mercilus.
He's fantastic.
Also taken after Shea McClellan in round one a few years back. Mercilus has a torn pec. Is it me, or have there been a ton of torn pectorals
this
year?
There have been a lot of them.
And like, right, both the middle linebackers for the Bears were torn pecs.
Yeah, Freeman and Kwiatkowski.
Yeah, so yeah. It feels like there's a lot of those. So, I mean, those injuries, and Odell Beckham Jr. watching him weeping uncontrollably as his ankle was fractured and he got taken off the field yesterday.
Both before and after the injury. Did you see the video of him weeping on the sideline before, like covered with a towel?
He's a very volatile,
emotional
guy.
Yeah, but he didn't talk because of the injury, so we don't know why he was crying beforehand.
There were drops. He made a couple of drops yesterday. He leads the league in drops, by the way, through 5 weeks. But and also just a lot of little small injuries for him yesterday, and then the full-on fracture of the ankle. But because he's so emotional, volatile, I wasn't sure that it was really broken yesterday or not.
I was when I saw the replay. The replay was gruesome.
I missed that.
I mean,
maybe I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Willis McGahee bad.
But it was bad.
It was pretty savage. The Chris Conley injury in the Sunday night game, it was like you could see his Achilles snap.
Jeez.
Like you could like he's just like, you know, his muscles are just bulging out of his legs.
Right.
Like you could see the tendon and like the reverberation.
Did it roll up? Did it roll up the back of the calf
on the Conley play?
That's
it was ridiculous. And how about, speaking of injuries on the other side of it, like a positive one? We saw what Danny Trevathan did to Devontae Adams.
Incredible.
Devontae Adams coming back and having that game, including the game-winning touchdown from Rodgers.
Amazing.
I thought he might have been out for the season.
That's going to be up there for me with the Anquan Boldin return that I always reference, when he broke his face and came back immediately. For Devontae Adams to be able to play and be that good. And in that game, Aaron Rodgers.
It was ridiculous. I mean, he gets the ball back down, field goal to tie, touchdown to win, a minute 13 left, one timeout. And Aikman and Buck on the broadcast are actively crushing the Cowboys
for leaving him that much time,
for scoring a touchdown. Now, they were right. The second down play,
they threw it to Dez.
They easily could have ran the ball, but maybe they run the ball on that play with the Dak Prescott keeper, and he gets in on second down instead of third down. So you can't fall on the ball on the 1 yard line and try to run it out when you need a touchdown to win.
But they have done. They did so much. There was a 9 minute drive for the Cowboys. They had done so much to stretch it out and leave him with as little time as possible. They could have done just a little bit more as they were dominating the line of scrimmage.
I get it, but since the field goal doesn't tie in that spot, you need the touchdown. Like, what if you sit on at the 1 yard line and then you get a false start penalty? You know what I mean? Like, it's just
no. I don't mean sit on a one, but I think you run the ball on that second down play, make them burn the timeout and burn the clock.
But what I'm saying is that if Dak Prescott, let's just assume that the next running play that they ran on third down is the play that they would have run on second down. He would have scored the touchdown on second down, potentially.
How about a little bit more from a Bears list Sunday? Alex Smith, MVP, 324 yards and 3 touchdowns for an undefeated Kansas City Chiefs team now?
I don't recognize him. I do not recognize him. He would have plays like he's had in the first 5 weeks of this season, like one a game maybe, and now it is consistent. He's number one in the NFL in yards per attempt. Number one. Number one. I can't get over it. It's ridiculous. Like, they are the best team in the NFL because they always, man, were in the conversation for best team 2 through 53.
Right.
But it was the one that kept them with the low ceiling, and now the one is number one in the damn NFL in yards per attempt.
And then Ben Roethlisberger throwing 5 interceptions and openly questioning himself after the game. Maybe I don't have it anymore. He went on to talk and kind of back away from that, but you add that to the fact that he said he was considering retirement. There's chaos in Pittsburgh. That's at home, a giant favorite that somebody preferred on Friday. Some jackass preferred them on Friday.
But I prefer Jacksonville. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, look at you. But yeah, there's the Steelers are a terrible offense after everyone expected them to be a dominant offense.
Yeah, Jacksonville's defense is real. Cincinnati must win. Now they're back in the conversation because ever since firing their offensive coordinator after 2 weeks, they've looked a little bit better. That Bills-Cincy game was very weird. There's a ton more that we can do for a few minutes after the update. We have Joe Maddon in 20 minutes. Jake Arrieta with some comments as well. Pre-game we'll get to in just a second. Last in the NFL in yards per game and points per game, Jay Cutler.
Oh, my God.
There was an active
"We want more."
"We want more" chant for Matt Moore and Adam Gase saying that he is not making his decision on quarterback based on a popularity contest and that quarterback was way down on the list of problems. So it sounds like Adam Gase is willing to ride this Jay Cutler experiment out a little bit.
Well, they're horrible.
He's averaging 128 passing yards the last two games with one touchdown and 2 interceptions.
Unbelievable.
Jay Cutler has been objectively terrible.
Just absolutely brutal. You had all sorts of other stuff that's gone on in the league and surrounding the league. But let's take a break because we want to make sure we are clear to listen to Joe Maddon when he talks. Jake Arrieta, by the way, Danny, just said that he's good to go tomorrow. He feels hamstring is not an issue, is what he says. After 2 very good bullpen bullpen sessions, he feels very, very good, ready to go.
It's a huge variable for them to see if they're going to go further. We'll be back. Spiegel and Parkins live at the Park at Wrigley on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And we are going to hear Joe Maddon talk about stuff coming up any moment now. Is it Spiegel and Parkins live from the Park at Wrigley, presented by CDW and Intel, CDW people who get it, and sponsored by Old Dominion Freight Line, the official freight carrier of Major League Baseball and the Cubs. Joe Maddon will be on the show for his weekly appearance still tomorrow, but we'll listen into the press conference today when he steps to the podium. I'm pumped for Quintana, man. Like, to me, it's early. Can he settle in? Is he jacked up early? But if that first, second inning, he looks good, I feel like he's poised to cruise because he's been their best starter in September. I've got some numbers for you if you want them.
Yeah, go for it. He was great up in Milwaukee. That was the start that you think about.
That was the complete gamer.
As well as the first one when he was a Cub in Baltimore, that debut. But down the stretch for Quintana?
All right, so not only down – I'll give you the down the stretch here in just a second, but in terms of the settling in early. First inning ERA for Jose Quintana, 5.62. Second inning, 6.19. Third inning, 1.71. So it's those first two innings, and then he settles in and becomes an ace. In September, in 5 starts, a .225 batting average against, a 9-1 strikeout to walk ratio, and a .251 ERA. He's been great. In the last 5 starts of the regular season, he's been dominant. And early on, it takes him a little while to settle in, but once he does, he gets into a groove. So get through the first time through the order, and maybe he can get you into the 7th inning.
Exact same lineup for the Nationals that they've used the first 2 games. I know there was some speculation maybe Howie Kendrick would get in because he'd seen Quintana a lot. Seen Quintana a lot in the American League. But no, it's the same exact Nats lineup, and we'll see what happens with Scherzer. You want to bunt on Max Scherzer just to try and make him check out that hamstring? It was brought up to Maddon, and he actually didn't dismiss it the other night.
Make him field his position.
Yeah, go ahead, make him field the position. John Jay could bunt.
I was going to say, I'm looking at the lineup.
Who are the bunters?
Well, see, Hap's not in, and even though he hits for home, he's so fast. Like, he might be the fastest guy on the team. What, Hayward, Russell?
I could see Jay bunting after, you know, once he gets into the at-bat a little bit. Could also see Russell bunting at some point, and then Quintana would be bunting as a sacrifice. You might make Scherzer field his position twice in that regard.
Yeah. obviously I want to see Scherzer settling, like let him come to you, right, off the hamstring. But he's Max freaking Scherzer. Yeah. I am not going into this game thinking, hoping, but not expecting a lessened Max Scherzer. Like, I'm expecting you're going to have to beat one of the three best pitchers in baseball at basically their best.
I think that you are going to – you better have some long at-bats and try to grind it out. I know he'll be in attack mode, but, you know, get that dude out of there. If it's 100 pitches, try to get him to hit that in the fifth, you know, or sometime in the sixth, and you can get into their bullpen and see what you can do, some basic textbook stuff, right?
Right, and I mean, listen, you got Arrieta coming off his hamstring tomorrow and Scherzer coming off his today. So both of them are question marks in their own right. Quintana never making a playoff start. Like, there's always going to be questions there. But he's Max freaking Scherzer. I'm expecting him to be good.
He's got two different color eyes.
Yeah.
His nose is
kinda
enormous.
Smug.
He's smug because he has two different color eyes?
Yeah, it's intimidating. All right, cool. Fun fact about you, Max Scherzer. We get it. I've heard it before.
Smug.
It's a little smug.
He doesn't have control over that.
Yeah, I know he doesn't. I know it's not context.
How can a characteristic you're bored with be smug?
I don't know. You say I have jag face or bag face or whatever. I can't help my face.
I don't know that you – do you have bag face? Just – Both. Jay
both.
Says both.
Both.
No, there's just a bag factor with you. That's all it is.
That's
it's just kind of an inherent bag factor.
That's all it is.
That's a different thing.
So that could be helped, is what you're saying. Got it.
I don't know. Man, what a day to be out here at the park. I mean, lots of fans milling
right
about
turn.
And employees of this of the Cubs, at least. And I think every radio station that CBS owns is here. I'm pretty sure. I see K-Hits. I see US 99. I see B96. I see 93 XRT. I see us. And WBBM is also here.
Yeah.
So we are taking advantage of our relationship with
the Cubs.
Not
sure why the fan in New York is here. That's weird. Like, I didn't see that one coming.
No.
But, you know, hey, it's fine.
Whatevs.
All of CBS Chicago is here.
And there's a station from Washington, D.C. that's here. One of their stations. I don't know.
Yeah.
But everybody's here. This is the place to be until later on when Soldier Field is suddenly the place to be.
And I'll try to be at both. I'm a little nervous.
About the trek?
I'm nervous about I don't like missing stuff. Because if I do this whole thing to be able to experience both of them in person,
yeah.
Well, then I end up missing a bunch of the Bears game, and I'm going to be getting home so late. Then I'm going to need to just go back and watch it on DVR, and I'm not going to sleep before tomorrow's show.
I think, Danny, knowing you and knowing what your predilections are and also knowing what is, frankly, easier to catch up on.
Yeah.
Go ahead, leave here. Get out of here in the sixth or seventh, right?
Mm.
Knowing you.
Playoff baseball, though, man. This game matters more. Like, I understand that, whichever you prefer baseball for. This is a playoff game.
Damn right it is.
And a playoff game matters more. I expect Mitch Trubisky to have 160 or more starts for the Bears.
Uh-huh.
10 seasons, 16
but
apiece.
The logistical injuries. Nightmare that awaits you of actually getting to Soldier Field.
Right.
And you want to, you would like... You'd like to be there. Anyway, Joe Maddon is addressing the media right now. We'll go to it on 670 The Score.
Hey, what's up?
Can I open up some questions for Joe?
God bless it.
Got something, Johnny?
Johnny.
Johnny,
be good.
Joe.
Good morning, sir.
These games have been grinders throughout. And you watch a pitcher, especially if the game is close. Where is your first concern where your pitcher is going? Is it pitch count or is it speed count?
Velocity, you mean? Number on the board? Sometimes it's a combination of both things. During the course of the year, you get to know your guy at what number it starts going south from a little bit. So you're looking at numbers sometime, actual pitch count. But I will look at the board. I will look at the velocity. I was talking about cue tonight or this afternoon starting out, see the number that he's starting out at to see where he's at emotionally. I mean, if the number's too high, he might be overamped a little bit and you might not get the command you're looking for. But normally game in progress, I'm thinking about it right now, John Lester, I'll look at the number with Johnny. If that starts getting below 91, then I start becoming a little bit concerned with his fastball, not his cutter. So I'll look at Boz and Boers and I'll say, what was that? Because I wasn't sure if it was a fastball or a cutter. So I think that's where the gun is handy from a dugout perspective is sometimes you knowing your guy well enough, you know when he's losing something or if he's trying or if he's over-amped. Like he's like all of a sudden you see 94, 95 on a pulled fastball, you know, back off a little bit. Pitch counts, normally this time of the year, it's not as important in a sense – depends on, you know, what's going on, where the game's at, what do you have in your bullpen? Could you bring somebody out of the bullpen that's actually better than this guy right now? I always try to consider all those different things. But you're right, it's a combination of both things. It's pitch count and velocity tells a lot both ways sometimes.
Tyler?
So you got Quintana.
Hey, bud.
You got Quintana a couple of weeks before the deadline after a really tough first half for you guys. What did that mean to you, and did you expect that move and the front office to be as aggressive as they were giving up those guys?
Did I expect the move? You know, just talking to Theo and Jed, I knew it was possible. It came together rather quickly, I thought, and of course we're all for it. I mean, we gave up some really nice players, some young, really good players, and you know, good for the White Sox. They're going to enjoy those guys over the next couple years. For our perspective, we just thought that where we were at starting pitching wise, we needed to augment it at that point, and obviously we did. I think, you know, his numbers regarding his age and control were factors involved in all of that stuff, but I think it's just good old-fashioned scouting. I've seen him in the past in the American League, always liked him, but I had nothing to do with the decision. I'm just saying I've always liked the guy. And then when you meet him for the first time in the clubhouse and you talk to him and you get to – he looks you right in the eyeballs, man, and this guy's straight up. You love that immediately about him. So being proactive, probably it was going to have a lot of suitors, did have a lot of suitors at that point. So I'm just, you know, our guys did a great job of, you know, jumping the gun there a little bit and getting him because he's been really exceptionally important to us from the time we got him to this point.
Are you right, Brian?
Joe, when you think about your ideal pitching plan for any given game, is it still about getting the starter to go as long as he possibly can? Or with the quality of relievers now, do you actually look forward to getting to that time of game where you can start to mix and match with your pen?
It's a good question. I think it depends. I mean, it depends on your bullpen and what you have in your bullpen. You know, the Yankees were built for that. That's what they've done. That's what they did in the offseason and during the season. Their bullpen is firm. I still like our starters going deeply as they possibly can. I think that's where we benefit the most. And then if we're able to mix and match at the latter part, I mean, perfect world, seven innings always sounds good to me with the lead, because then you have, if somebody's having a hard time in the bullpen, you're normally able to back them up more readily. So I don't know that we're necessarily built with the strategy of this guy's the sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. I can't tell you that. Some of these other groups might be able to view the game differently with that. I think we're built to have our starters go as deeply as possible and then turn it over. And like I said, six innings is great. Like Johnny the other night was really good. We got Strope to CJ and then hopefully Wade, which I felt good about. When you start having to fill in the sixth inning a little bit, that's when it becomes more difficult. It's not September we have that extra numbers in the bullpen either. This is normal numbers. So you have to be – you have days off. I get all that stuff. But when it comes down to efficiency, you prefer six-plus out of your starter. I do.
Barry, on the right.
Joe, yes, you mentioned the other night you were comfortable with Edwards against Harper, comfortable with Montgomery against Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. Because they go left-right, are you going to have to make that choice where you're not going to have the normal-handedness, the normal –
Well, yeah, part of it, and that's what I've always talked about. I love reverse split pitchers, too. I mean, guys that are able to get the other side out well. And, you know, we have a couple of those. I mean, Wade Davis is actually that guy, too. So you have to be cognizant of that as you're filling it out. But Montgomery, I like him against righties also because he's a heavy ground ball guy. Ground ball pitchers you like versus either side normally, and that's what Mikey normally is. And CJ is good against both sides. His numbers are wonderful, but he is exceptionally good against lefties. As like I said, Wade is. You look at Pedro Strope. I mean, Strope's been really good against lefties also this year, but his pitch is really, for me, are designed for right hand, right on right kind of stuff. Dunsing, he's kind of like an outlier. You would think that you would like him better against lefties, which you do like him on lefties, but he's been really good against righties this year. So it's. If you could have neutral pitchers are absolutely the best. That's if you're going into the offseason, you want to make acquisitions to fill up your bullpen, you want the neutral guy, the guy that's good against both sides. We have several, I think, of those guys overall. But if you don't, I do like the reverse guys a lot because when it comes down to pinch hitting, he's going to get the better side normally unless the manager is proactive and stays away from that and goes right on right or left on left. But, yeah, that's why I like to try to do the same thing with our lineup. I try to stay away from left-left or right-right unless you think you're going to pinch hit for the guy. And then it's okay to stack it knowing that you have a good pinch hitter.
I'm going to go David here on the left, and then we'll go Bruce on the right.
Thought process behind Zobrist at second for the offense, Javi on the bench.
Scherzer. That's just Scherzer. I mean, just purely the fact that he's so oppressive against right-handed hitters, that more than anything, that's it. I don't like to play the game without Javi on the field. I've said that from the first time I saw him at spring training in 15. I said, man, we're a better team when he's on the field. And I love having him out there. But for right now, if we could build some offense and grab a lead and then switch to the defense in the latter part of the game, that's what we're going to try to do today.
It's Joe Maddon on the Spiegel & Parkin Show. You're listening to WSCR HD Chicago and WJMK HD2 Chicago.
Try to move Scherzer around on the mound, knowing that, you know, that load leg is a little hampered. And two, how much did you battle yourself on with Stella, knowing his numbers against him?
Yeah, first of all, you know, moving Scherzer, the guys that can probably will attempt to do that. We don't have – that's – we've talked about this before – even the other day, you know, when, with Johnny Lester pitching as an example, there's only certain things you can do. It's within your skill set. So the guys that are able to bunt may bunt, but guys that don't bunt, it's why ask them to do that? You might just be giving them an easy out. it's just so hard. I think, you know, we'll watch him the first inning or two. You have a pretty good idea where he's at physically and then try to react or adapt to it. But we don't have a whole lot of really good bunters for hits on this team. That's number one. Tommy wanted to keep either him or John Jay on the bench, and I thought it was smart to start John Jay today, and that keeps Tommy on the bench. Having him, his bat coming off the bench is important as a left-handed pinch hitter. So, knowing the numbers, Tommy hits a lot of good velocity, well, right-handed velocity. But I wanted to keep one of the two on the bench, and I chose to keep him on the bench.
In the back, James. Excuse me, God.
Joe, you often talk about the culture of a workplace and this, you know, keeping it loose and light. I just wonder, like, what effect maybe like Tim Buss has on that, and especially the way, like, before games he gathers the position players and they do that kind of group circle activity together.
I think that's undervalued, underestimated. I think it's invaluable. I encourage it. I encourage it in spring training. I encourage him right now. the way before the actual work begins, it's good to start the work off in a lighthearted manner or way, I think. And he's so creative. If you watch this in spring training at all, what he does out there is really good. And it really sets the tone for the work day, what he does in the weight room, what he does by huddling the masses outside. It's very entertaining. And the guys look forward to it. They really do. They gather willingly because they want to be there to hear what Bussy has to say today. So I love that. I've loved it back in the day with the Angels. I had Mick Billmeyer was really good at stuff like that, and even Frankie Rehberger, one of our pitching coaches, always look for that comedic relief in the morning, something that really lightens the mood before you get on with the work day. Bussy does it as good as anybody I've ever been around.
In the back, Phil?
Yes, sir, Phil.
Joe, in these playoffs, not your series but the other series, first-time starting pitchers have had a hard time. Is there something about Quintana, the start in Baltimore, his first one for you, or something that keeps you from worrying about this being his first time in this situation?
I mean, if I want to look for the common, a good thought or a common thought or the warm fuzzy in there, I think that start in Milwaukee helps. I mean, that was a really pertinent game on the road against a really good team that hits lefties well. I thought, hopefully, that he's going to draw on that experience right there. To me, that would be the separator, and we're going to find out. He's really prepared. He's really a focused guy. I mean, I'm just talking to him yesterday. He's always right here. He'll lighten up tomorrow after he pitches today, but moving into the game, his game day, he's always really hyper-focused. So what John was talking about earlier, watching the gun readings early to see if they're actually too high. That would be like something like a red flag, just maybe back off just a little bit. That's what I'm more concerned with. I think this game, like to get into the flow is really going to be important for him, obviously. But I want to believe the experience in Milwaukee is going to be helpful.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.